Hello and welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney with you, and plenty to discuss this week. We have a new team in IndyCar announced for 2025. We have driver announcements and sponsor announcements for the 2024 Indianapolis 500. We had testing for the Indianapolis 500 as well. Oh, and some interesting nuggets on TV stuff too. So we'll get to all that this week on the show. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Caleb. How are you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. We've survived so far a waterlogged week here in Fort Wayne.
We have. And also, next week is race week, which I feel we always make a big deal about the lack of or gaps in the schedule. Do you, when it happens, those gaps, does it affect you as much as we like to think it does when the schedule comes out? Or after St. Pete, you're like, oh, here we go. We don't have a race till XX. It just never seems to affect me as much as I say it will.
Yeah, because of the IMS Open test that we had to look forward to, which we'll get to that eventually, but also just a ton of announcements this week.
Sure.
Doesn't feel as bad. Now, come this weekend, with no college basketball on, yeah, I'll probably be like, oh, there's nothing to watch.
That is true. We did have the tournament to kind of get us through.
That certainly helped me quite a bit. So we'll dive in first with, I think, the biggest news of the week, and that's that it is official. Prima Racing will move over to IndyCar in 2025, a two-car effort. They'll be powered by Chevrolet. And I think the other interesting aspect, Piers Phillips, who has worked with then Schmidt Peterson and also with the Ray Hall team, is going to be the guy leading the charge on this operation. He's the Prima Racing IndyCar CEO. And he had some great quotes talking about, in this announcement, the team coming over. He said, "We're not afraid of coming in and having to compete for our places on the grid," talking about, you know, potential charters and having spots, because they will be, as of now, 29 entries. And we'll get to that in a second. But also, he had a great quote talking about the challenge, but also the thing of where, well, we can't be afraid, right? And Prima's certainly not afraid, because he had this to say talking about the grid. "We are not coming here without naming any other teams to make up numbers, scraping the race in the back of the grid." That's exceptional.
It's tough not to be like Piers Phillips after a comment like that. And we know which teams he's talking about. He knows which teams he's talking about. And the teams know which teams he's talking about. Prima is, however it works out, is coming in knowing that it has to do this, that, and the other, and invest in XYZ to make it happen. And I think it's cool to see. And you hope the direct comparison is Carlin. You hope it's not Carlin. I don't think it's going to be another Carlin, because I think Prima is going to be more prepared than Carlin to come in. And it's going to take a while, but I also respect Piers Phillips for what he said, because he's absolutely right. There are purely, and this is my thing, and something that certain people can't get past, is you have to protect. So much is about protecting your current owners. And my thing is, why are we protecting certain owners that don't maximize, that don't make the series better? There are certain teams in this series that aren't making the series better. If Prima can come in and replace one of those, because the fear is, oh my gosh, what if we lose a team and when we add a team? So what? If that new team brings more to the table in the series, is more competitive in the series, invests more in its team in the series, it's better for the series, and it's better for the show, and it's better for the fans. I don't hold coin in this sanctity as, oh my gosh, what if coin went away? It wouldn't bother me one iota if coin went away. It wouldn't bother me one iota if Foyt went away. There's so many people that hold these teams in such high regard. We can't lose these teams. Why not? What are they adding to the series? And that's no knock on Dale Coyne and Larry Foyt and all that. I don't understand why people are so dedicated to these teams that, I'm sorry, don't bring a lot to the table, period, in terms of competitiveness. We know the history of Foyt. I get it. But what have you done for me lately? It's a ruthless sport.
Well, I mean, they had a third place of the Indy 500 last year. But outside of that, yes, there's a lot to be desired. And hopefully their partnership or technical alliance with Penske, you know, raises the boat, so to speak, for Foyt. But you look at Prima and what they've done in again, they're an Italian-based team. They've competed primarily in F2 and other series over the years. I mean, they've had IndyCar drivers past and present, including like Ryan Briscoe, for example, Jacques Villeneuve, for example, but also more recently, current IndyCar drivers, Marcus Armstrong, Callum Ilott, and Felix Rosenquist drove for them. So there's a lot of familiarity with some of the names, Charles Leclerc, Nick DeVries, Oscar Piastri,
Ollie
Bierman, who stepped in for Ferrari earlier this season, all recent drivers for this team. So that's the good thing. Also, they're not hiding away from the fact that this is a big challenge. And when we talk about numbers and car count, I mean, it sounds like this is kind of the beginning. And Able Motorsports, of course, they want to expand. They're still working on their entry for the Indy 500 for next month. They have their new chassis in the shop. There are apparently two or three teams after Prima has been confirmed that are still in ongoing conversations for 2025. Able, HMD, you know, Vassar Sullivan's been thrown out there for years, right?
Miller.
Yeah, Pratt Miller as well. So there are other options. Now, I'm not saying all these are going to come to fruition. To be clear, Prima has a lot to get done, but they seem as prepared as anyone in terms of getting on the grid for St. Pete next year or wherever IndyCar starts the season. But this is a boost, and they will likely bring in a junior driver from Europe, of course, and then an established IndyCar star. Now, who that star could be, it's been mentioned Callum Ilott. Apparently another name in the fold is Alexander Rossi, which Ilott obviously is focusing on his sports cars, and he filled in at the open test. He'll fill in when needed this year. But McLaren obviously likes him. Prima likes him because he's run for them. And Alexander Rossi, another name at the table. So you look at it, we know it'll be some European driver that we're probably not going to follow. It will be one of the drivers. As far as the other driver, is it really between Ilott and Rossi? Do you think it's that simple?
Well, it depends on the year, particularly mm-hmm. with Rossi. If he doesn't perform at McLaren this year, he's out.
Yes.
And so, yeah, he could very well be a contender for one of those seats. If he goes out, wins a couple races, finishes in the top eight of the points, then maybe he probably comes back with McLaren. If he doesn't perform, he's out. And he could be a Prima guy. And I think with Pierre Phillips is, I think what helps Prima too is they have the backing, but they also have somebody at the helm that has experience in IndyCar. Pierre Phillips worked with Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan. He worked with Errol McLaren. He's worked with established teams in IndyCar. RLL and McLaren obviously are in the upper half of IndyCar teams. Ray Hall kind of on that line, right? But you're not talking about a guy that was with Juncos and Dragon Speed or something. This is a guy that's been with the established teams in the sport, knows what it takes, and I think that can be a huge asset because he's going to be able to go to his boss and say, if you want to do this, this is what you're going to have to do. This is what it's going to have to take investment-wise. And so hopefully, Prima, it sounds like Pierre Phillips is going to get what he needs from Prima to make this happen. But I love the fact that what he said was basically we're not going to be a field filler. And that kind of leads then to my other point with Prima, because so many people are pointing out and saying, well, there are only going to be 27 car grids and they're going to have to qualify their way into most races if the charter system and these proposals go the way they are. I have a hard time believing that Prima was not told by IndyCar or was told by IndyCar that they would have to qualify for every race next year. And Prima's still jumping in with two cars. You have a hard sell. Maybe there's, hey, Toronto, it's going to be a little dicey. And a couple other places. Mid-Ohio, I have a hard time IndyCar saying, you're going to show up at 16 or all 17 races next year having to race your way in or qualify your way in. I have a hard time buying that.
The other thing is, who's not to say there won't be attrition? Because I fully expect there to be attrition. We have it nearly every year.
It's Ganassi really with the hybrid, five.
With the cost of the hybrid coming on this summer, which is looking at more closer to 450,000, even half a million you know, for teams, as opposed to the initially touted, what was it, like 200,000 or 300,000? Like, costs go up, right? Teams come and go, owners come and go. I will be shocked if we have 29 cars on the grid in the first race next season.
Isn't that why, if for me, it's kind of hard to take the complaints by the owners that the sport keeps getting more expensive and it's very difficult for us to do this, that, and the other when they're all running more cars, which means more employees? It's just like wine to wine, I guess.
Also, do we really expect Ganassi to run five full-time cars next year? That's not happening.
But teams are like, oh, we can barely make it through, but oh yeah, we also have three cars in the grid. Like, we're kind of like, I don't know. It's tough for me to feel the pain of the owners when you're running multiple cars in a season. You're not downsizing, or the threat of downsizing because we can't afford to pay our employees and this and that because we have to invest so much in a hybrid system and stuff like that. Natural attrition isn't a bad thing. Is kind of my overarching thing with IndyCar. In a couple of years, hopefully, when we have a new chassis and people are going to be terrified because, oh my gosh, there could be four or five cars that drop out, or one or two teams that drop out because of the cost. And I'm like, so what? It keeps the series fresh, I think, with new blood, and we don't need all these cars.
Yeah, 29 is excessive. I would be on board for a number of 24, 25, 26, no more than 28 for full-time entries. Like, we used to have more part-time entries.
Right.
And that's what's gone away. Like, that's what we actually need to see more of, is teams with the approach. We talk Meyer Shank all the time, right? Their methodical approach, five races, then 10, then full time, right? Of entering the series. And maybe that's what we need more of, instead of teams diving in head first. We saw that work for Carlin. I'm not saying that's going to be a disaster for Prima.
Did it work for Carlin?
No, I'm saying it didn't work for Carlin.
Yes. Yeah.
But going head first that way. And obviously having two out of their three cars plus their satellite team missing the Indy 500 in 2019 was truly the final nail in the coffin. But I just think we don't need that many full-time entries. Like,
no,
it's not necessary.
And that made my biggest gripe about certain IndyCar fans and even IndyCar media is, oh my gosh, we have to protect the owners. And I go, why? Well, I think an infusion of new, fresh ideas, new, fresh owners into the series, maybe to the loss of others, would be a good thing for the series. But maybe I'm in the minority.
Then count me in the minority as well.
You and me, it's like, oh my gosh, we can't lose this. He's been an institution for 25 years and we can't lose this. It's the namesake of a team for the arguably the greatest driver of all time. And I'm like, I don't really care. It's a ruthless sport. And if there's teams that can come in and be more competitive in the series and make the series deeper in terms of drivers and teams that can win races and championships, isn't that the better thing for the series than worrying about holding on to also rans who are field fillers?
Yeah.
And I do think it's more to forward thinking people, progressive thinking, as opposed to holding on to the past type thinking. There's room for both. I get it. But so many people are stuck with what this team and this person and this driver and this car did 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Well, and how much of it is it pre-unification, right? Where we had 17 car full-time grids in either series.
True.
But so maybe that's a bigger factor. And so it's just like, even though it's been over 15 years since then, we still hold on to that. Oh, we got to, car count, the grid, all that. And outside of, 2008, there was a big bump for obvious reasons, teams migrating over from Champ Car. But then you had the recession, and in 2009, you had 22 full-time cars.
Yeah.
And then it's gone up slowly since. We don't need 30 full-time cars.
Look at it this way. So much has been made in the outrage, the vitriol towards Formula One because they won't expand. And people have made the case that when you compare Andretti Global to a Williams or a whatever, or a Haas, is they're better for Formula One to be in that series than those teams, probably because of the investment. But Formula One's not letting them in, or at least the teams are not letting them in. It's it's almost the same situation, but a different way of going about it in IndyCar because they've maxed out.
Well, but they maxed out because the chassis from 2012.
Right, but what that's I'm saying the is there's why. No path into the series for new teams. Similar to Formula One. It's different. It's because the teams are saying no in Formula One. But for IndyCar, you look at, let's take Pratt Miller, for example, is why they can't get in. Because they're blocked. They can't get a charter because they're going to max out the charters already with existing teams. And they can't play their or race their way into leader circle money because you're going to have to be a charter team to be eligible for the leader circle. So there's no way for Pratt Miller to get into the series. It's being blocked. It's the same thing. It's the same end result as what's going on in Formula One. The teams in Formula One are saying no. But in IndyCar, they're protecting the existing teams so much that new teams that could raise the bar for the series overall, definitely raise the floor of the series, can't get in. Who's to say Prima wouldn't come in and be on the level of Roy Hall, Letterman, Lanigan? And same thing with Pratt Miller. I don't think we're saying they're going to come in and be Ganassi or Penske.
No.
But they could come in and be maybe a step below and in a couple years maybe move up to that Andretti McLaren range. Who's to say they can't do that? We know Coyne's not doing that. We know Voigt's not doing that. So we're
Ed Carpenter's not doing not that as doing a team that. Outside of, you know, qualifying at Indy.
Right. I mean, don't
now Rinus VK did look good in St. Pete, but it is one race. So right. We need more of a sample size.
So I think the outrage that people have with Formula One is how dare they not let new teams in. IndyCar is also kind of in the same thing, is how dare they not make it easier for new teams to get in because they're protecting their existing teams so much. 10 years ago, you had to because there was a dearth of people that wanted to invest in an IndyCar team. Now you have teams lining up to trying to get in. There's just no room. And when you look at the bottom of the current team roster in IndyCar, there are too many bottom feeders. There are too many teams with zero chance of winning a championship. And too many teams with zero chance of winning a race. And isn't it better for the series long term going forward to have more teams in the series that are invested enough to crack into that winning races category, having more teams and more drivers that can win races? We've said it before. I would rather have 23 drivers and car and entries with all of them having a good chance of winning. I would take 20 with all with a good chance of winning as opposed to 27, 28, 29 cars where there's 5 to 7 that have no chance whatsoever.
Which is, I mean, to be clear, IndyCar has been that way for years, but the at least the floor has been raised slightly from where it used to be
yeah,
back in the day.
But don't come at me with parity in IndyCar when there's no parity.
Not when two teams have won every championship going back to 2013.
There's two teams that can win championships and four teams that can win races with an outside shot of a Ray Hall.
I'd say five.
Yeah, with an outside shot here or there. But consistently, there's only four teams.
So Prima's in. I think we both agree this is a good thing. Do you have any doubts on this project? I mean, we've seen teams in terms of get announced, right? Remember Gilles Deferrin's team? He's going to have Tony Kanaan, and that didn't come to the grid, and that would have been, what, 2012? I forget the year.
Yeah, early 2010. Are you asking, is there any doubt that they will be on the grid for two cars? Unless...
I mean, they have the engine lease, and that's the key thing. I mean, obviously, Michael Schenck tried to move over as well previously, and it didn't work, but that's because he couldn't get an engine lease.
I think if the announcement of the charter system, which could come as early as next month, is not in line with what Prima has been told or what Prima understands, then you could see them maybe going, we're not doing this. If for some reason there's a disconnect between Prima and IndyCar on what that's going to be and how it affects Prima, and that would be totally IndyCar, not informing a new team that, hey, this is how it's going to be, then I wouldn't be surprised if Prima backs out. But other than that, this sounds as definite of a team ad in quite some time in terms of the stability, having engine leases and all that. This is an established team that will bring some sponsors too as well. So, and a natural pipeline of drivers. So I think it's overall, it's a big gain for IndyCar. I'm looking forward to Prima and seeing what they can do. I just wish they had a greater opportunity to break in and make some noise, despite, and unfortunately it'd be the expense of another team, but I just, you know, this is a results driven series. I want to see the more teams, the more drivers, the more cars that can compete at every race, the more exciting the series is. And I think some people are a little bit delusional on just how diverse this series is.
Over under 28.5 full-time entries at St. Pete. What are you taking?
Under.
I am as well. Again, I will be stunned if we have 29 cars at St. Pete. Plain and simple.
Yeah, I just have a hard time convincing me that there's going to be 5 cars at Ganassi.
And I continue to say the cost of the hybrids, right? Teams are going to complain about that, and then they may kind of scale back a little for a year and focus on getting that developed and instead of adding another extra entry. And I think that's the factor.
I mean, I could see that. I could see coin going down to a single entry if things don't get better there in terms of funding. I think those are the top two that are kind of in my mind. You never know with Ray Hall. Does Ray Hall go to 2? I think they like 3. Anything can happen. But they most likely, if I had to pick 2, is Ganassi dropping to 4 and coin dropping to 1.
We shall see. Elsewhere in team and driver announcements throughout the week. First off, this was not a surprise, but it's finally official. Catherine Legg gives us 34 confirmed car and driver entries for this year's Indianapolis 500. We expect a 35th from Abel. We'll get to that in a second. She will drive the number 51 Honda next month. So, ironically, Jack Harvey goes to coin. she goes to coin. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Siegel's doing the Indy 500, yes, though, for that seat. So it won't be Jack Harvey. But the other thing is ELF Cosmetics will be the primary sponsor. Now, I learned something new. I had heard of ELF. And what's funny is there
you
used to be a French.
Well,
I learned what it is.
Okay.
Eyes, lips, face. I had no idea. Apparently, after talking with my wife, they are like kind of a good entry-level cosmetics brand.
Okay.
That like a lot of middle schoolers would use.
Yeah.
But this is a big deal. It's the first time there's been a beauty brand as an Indy 500 primary sponsor.
Which is awesome. A woman driver.
This is a well-known brand.
Yes. It's a woman driver with an established team or with an established sponsor. And could it bring new eyes? We'll see how they use activation and initiatives to put some eyes on the product and maybe bring in some young women that otherwise wouldn't care about auto racing into the series, particularly for the 500. So I like it. It's great to see. Great to see Catherine Legg back. Great to see a new sponsor, particularly with what kind of sponsor it is. And hopefully it can make the show.
Yes, we shall see, because that will be one of those cars we expect to be on the bubble based on what coin has done this season. Also in announcements, Connor Daly, his car was unveiled, the number 24 Chevrolet sponsored by Polkadot. Now they are the secure core of Web3.
Please explain to me what this is. I read the story and still don't understand.
I read the story as well. It's the first time a major athlete sponsorship has been decided by a community vote using blockchain technology. I don't know what any of that means. It's something about crypto and developers and Web3, which I've heard of Web3. It's essentially the third generation, right, of the internet. I don't know what it means, but basically someone on Polkadot put it to a vote and people voted and decided to raise the $2.1 million necessary for the Indy 500 sponsorship. Obviously, a lot of people voting probably.
So they vote to donate their money, or they voted for the company
to use the money.
And why?
They put it to a vote. Like, it was a sponsorship package put to a vote on the platform.
Of just the people that vote have any financial incentive into this whatsoever. Are they investors in Polkadot?
They're not like investors, or they're just people who use the platform.
So why wouldn't they vote yes? I guess I don't know. My thing was, I thought it was something where it was like, hey, it's a publicly invested company.
No.
And you had investors vote to say, yes, we will invest So
Nathan Brown of the Indy Star has a good article trying to explain it. I still don't understand it, but it's cool because it was put to a vote and they voted basically. So it's a blockchain.
I don't know.
It supports other blockchains.
I don't know what a blockchain is.
Blockchain is at the heart of most cryptocurrency, according to Brown. And it's a digital ledger that stores data. It's decentralized and more secure.
What?
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means, but it's used for crypto projects and other technologies.
Well, we know Connor Daly has been attached, obviously, with the cryptocurrency
with
stuff like
BitNile
that.
BitNile previously.
So, all that matters, it's a car with a sponsor on the grid.
And I've at least, I think I've heard of it. I don't know.
You think you've
heard it? It sounds familiar.
When you look at the livery, does it? Oh, okay. I've seen that logo, or it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds familiar. I don't know. But here's the thing. This is cool. They put, so the DOT holders can vote on what the community does, according to Connor Daly. It's not a corporate marketing team. It's the community. So it's the people who use the platform, and they voted several months back, and Connor Daly had to himself get educated on the platform, and a Polkadot community member reached out to Daly. And then they kind of put something together. Anyone who is, it's open to anyone who holds a DOT, which I guess is someone on the platform, and it passed nearly 96% approval rating. And the money raised, he's a brand ambassador, covers sponsorship for the Indy 500 and one race each in the NASCAR Truck Series and Nitro Rallycross.
All right. Well,
which obviously Ryan Reinbold has a Nitro Rallycross team. So that's
glad it worked
fit.
Out. Yes. Maybe I'm too old. Maybe I just too dumb. I don't know.
I don't get it. But hey, it's a first time thing for them, and it's a new brand in the Indy 500. And we were just talking about right with ELF. That means another new thing with Connor Daly. So either way, we'll take it.
We'll take it. So now we're at 34. Is there, let's talk about Able Motorsports.
Yeah, so the latest update for them, and I would think their timeline is very soon, because we would expect the Indy 500 entry list to be out pretty soon after Long Beach. And the latest with Able is they're still talking with drivers. They have their brand new Dallara DW12 in the shop. They're working on preparing that. That was delivered last week on Friday per Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com. And the driver discussion obviously starts with RC Enerson. They're trying to get a deal. Other drivers mentioned Charlie Kimball, Stefan Wilson, Devlin DeFrancesco as well. But they basically, Bill Abel said he's not losing sleep over the fact that, you know, they don't have a driver. As far as them not being ready for the Indy 500, he said, not being there really hasn't crossed my mind. So we'll see.
Okay. Does he realize the race is in 6 weeks? I mean, just to make sure.
I hope so.
I'm sorry. This is a effort that 95% of me feels like there'll be a story in the coming weeks that will say we just didn't have enough time to put everything together. But
we thought the same thing last year, though. They weren't at the open test and they made the race for these.
That's true. Well, then I would love 35. Make no mistake. I hate bumping one. I would love bumping two, which then brings me to my question for you. If, let's say, Abel is in, I know it's not official, but let's say hypothetically 35 cars. Who are the two that you would look at as being bumped? Because I think it would be easy to say those two. But as we learned last year, that wasn't the case.
I will say Nolan Siegel, a rookie, right, with Coin. It's a big ask, even with all the practice time and track time.
Uh-huh.
And he's talented. Like, don't get me wrong. He's talented. But I just think it's asking a lot. And then I would say one other driver who we won't expect that has a crash, you know, in qualifying, and that does it. And I don't know who that driver is.
Could it be? I mean, we just talked about Connor Daly. Dreyer and Reinbold. I know both RHR and Connor Daly.
That's a solid team. I'm not worried about them.
But I mean, you look at it everywhere as a solid.
Yeah, but, solid teams. But I mean, you have a crash and that does it.
Well, that's what I'm saying with Ryan Hunter-Reay and Connor Daly. I'm not saying they're inferior drivers. I'm saying one broken part or one crash and all of a sudden you're chasing it the rest of the week. Because people will say month. Oh, you're chasing it the rest of the month. No. You have a week. And if you crash on Tuesday, this is the thing. That's why hypothetically, that's maybe part of the excitement of cutting down the month is if you have weather and you lose a day or a day and a half and you crash or you don't have speed on Tuesday and then it rains Wednesday, Thursday, and all of a sudden it's fast Friday. I'm saying that week goes really quick if you don't have a clear week of weather. So I look at the teams that maybe don't have the infrastructure to handle early adversity in the week if it rains. And I would look at Dreyer and Reinbold as potentially something happening.
So who are your picks? So I went with Nolan Siegel, and I'll go with... man. It'll be a team with an entry where they're chasing something, right? And trying to think of who that
what
team
I know,
could be. I'm going to go with Romain Grosjean.
Really? With Juncos?
Yeah.
I am going to go Catherine Legg, because you took Nolan Siegel. I think Nolan Siegel is a very impressive driver. Do I think he's ready for the 500? No, but I think I would have picked him if you didn't.
Yeah.
So I'll just go the other driver with coin.
And it's not against him. It's the situation.
Right. Exactly. And then I will go maybe hopeful that there is some drama here. I know Foyt showed speed last year, and I know they...
Ooh, Stingray Rob?
But I'm going Stingray Rob.
That's who I should have picked.
I know that they showed speed in the partnership with Penske. I get it, but I'm going Stingray Rob.
We shall see how it plays out. One other note on the driver front. You had Callum Ilott participate in the IMS Open Test. Theo Pourchaire is on standby for Long Beach if David Malukas can't return. And considering Malukas didn't participate in the IMS Open Test, it's not looking promising for Long Beach next weekend, obviously.
So we could see that F2 driver is what you're saying?
Yeah. Theo Pourchaire.
That'd be fun. That's
the understanding.
He's the defending F2 champion. And what is he, a reserve driver right now? He's not racing F2 again?
So Ilott has his hypercar, sports car commitments.
Okay.
Pourchaire, let's see. I mean, he didn't have an opportunity for F1 because there are just no seats available.
That always happens.
He is, yes, reserve driver for Sauber.
That's fun.
And he's running Super Formula in Japan.
Okay. Which is, you know, okay.
It's a really good championship. Yeah. Their next event, though, isn't, according to Pruitt, isn't until mid-May. So no conflicts for Long Beach or Barber or the Indy GP. Now, the plan all along is for Malukas to be back in time for Long Beach. So we'll see if that holds true.
I mean, it's a week from today as we record here on Friday morning, the 12th of April.
Not looking good at the moment. And then... we had the open test this week. Just Newgarden led the speed charts just one day. Kyle Larson was second. It was a toe lap. I'm not taking a whole lot out of testing times on this because the temperatures were cool as well. I mean, it's just there's no way to compare anything. I guess the good part is that no one crashed is the key thing for me.
Very, very true. I don't know what it is, what it was. I had next to no interest in watching this.
And I had some of it on after the fact, watching a replay on Peacock, but unless we have like a crash or some big news announcement, and we had news announcements throughout the day. We also, Marco Andretti, his livery unveiled as well, kind of that midnight blue and black. I don't know how you say, is it Maypay?
I have no
Maypay.
Idea.
Really cool looking car, though, I must admit.
Yeah.
The Andretti cars have this cool kind of dark tone to them this year, and they all look really cool.
Sinister, a little bit, maybe a little sinister would be the right word.
I think it looks really good, and it's going to help having Craig Hampson, who's just moving over to the organization, to be his engineer. Great timing.
Will definitely help out for sure. I guess just with the open test, I haven't jumped in the deep end of the Kyle Larson hype. Maybe it's because I have been, since I started following NASCAR in the early 2000s, this is the most apathetic I've been to NASCAR. It doesn't move the needle whatsoever for me in terms of drivers. I know Kyle Larson's the most popular driver, arguably the most popular driver, but it's not moving the needle yet for me. And then Two, it's the same cars. It's the same setups. If it was hybrid tech, like it will be next year, then I'd be more interested for sure. But I'm just like, I don't know. Everything's the same.
The real issue, and Nathan Brown's gone into detail on this, if he doesn't qualify in the fast nine, right? Or at least, you know, if he struggles in it's going to be a mess in terms of what he does, because the NASCAR All-Star Race is that weekend. And so he's got a lot to really figure out in terms of his schedule.
Yeah,
and
it's going to be
a lot.
I don't
think he's skipping the NASCAR All-Star Race.
No, but I don't know. You better qualify.
Are you concerned? Like, unless there's a crash.
Well, that's
like
what I'm saying.
Friday.
That's the great unknown for everybody. If you have a crash and you tear up a car, then everything is up for grabs and you don't know. And if you have a combination of a couple days of weather and then a crash, or a crash and a couple days, like the week can get very, very stressful if you put it into the wall. Especially if it's a major crash.
He doesn't have his travel plans finalized in place for the double, but obviously, I mean, that will get figured out. But the real issue is, so you have Fast Friday from 12 to 6, and then North Wilkesboro is where they're hosting the All-Star Race. They have practice 4 to 4:50 that same day, less than an hour later, qualifying for the next day's heats and pit crew challenge. It's about 90 minutes to get from Indy to North Wilkesboro, if they don't want to skip practice and qualifying. So again, he may only get a couple hours practice with the increased boost for qualifying, which is not ideal because you're going a lot faster.
Very much so. So it is. It's always the storylines of qualifying week, of practice week. Don't call it anything else. It's not the month. If it's not nice weather all the way through, and if you put it potentially in the wall, have a shunt of some sort, then as you approach, you know, I mean, you really only have 3 days of practice. You have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday is different because it's Fast Friday, but you really only have three quote unquote normal days. If you lose a day because of weather, if you lose a day because of a mechanical, if you lose a day or day and a half or 2 days because you crash, you know, then you're up against it. So that's why I put anything is really up for grabs, depending on what happens early in that week.
And again, I mean, best case scenario, he qualifies between 13th and 30th, so he's locked in on the grid.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to, which, to be fair, feels very realistic.
Yeah.
But last year, all four Arrow McLaren cars made the fast 12 and started top nine. So then that could be another mess on the Sunday. But we'll see what happens. This is a lot of stuff, and we're far out.
I think he's going to have a problem qualifying.
No, I don't think so either.
Showed pace in the test, so I know we don't talk about testing times, but he'll be fine.
I think so.
As long as he didn't put it into the wall.
True, as well. All right, if you agree or disagree with us, we'd love for you to interact with us. You can always find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. That's the website. You can sign up for the email list. It is free. You'll get emails of new episodes when they come out, any special announcements as well. Plus, we have the store t-shirts and stickers for sale on there. On social media, IndyCar Podcast on Twitter/X. Also on Instagram, on Facebook, just search for New Track Record. Our email, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us an email there. You can support us via Patreon, patreon.com/newtrackrecord, starting at just $1 a month. You can be a member and support us on there. And as always, download the podcast and listen in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Overcast, Castbox, Player FM, wherever you get your podcasts, just not Google Podcasts. That's YouTube Music now.
Oh, okay.
But that is how you can support us on there and listen to the show and join for free. Okay, mailbag time, and it's short this week, and that's not really a surprise. But we go back to last week and the latest and greatest, and a couple of reactions from before. And let's see here. The first one, this is from Jeff Zerneski. So we talked a lot about Prima and Fox Sports last week. So here's one on Prima. This from Jeff Cerneski saying, guys, I think Prima joining IndyCar would be good for the series. IndyCar needs more teams. I'm sure Prima understands the difficulty of joining the series and would not expect immediate success. Additionally, it'll bring more eyes and sponsors from Italy and Europe. That's a part we didn't really talk about, right?
Right.
And yeah. That's true.
Yes, and we know the glutton of talent that can't break through into Formula One that just has nowhere else to go. Now you're kind of building that natural pipeline into the United States. It was something that we expected to see with Carlin if that had turned into a long-term thing. It didn't. The hope is it does with Prima.
This from Jay Blasteri saying, very insightful and enjoyable episode with selecting the best TV partner, the structure of a charter system, and significant new team or teams coming online. IndyCar is at a serious crossroads in determining the future of IndyCar. Also saying both of you do a great job. Truly add to IndyCar. We appreciate that.
What do you say? Insightful?
Yeah.
Is he listening to this show?
I don't know.
Huh. No, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Beans B-Card blog said, great conversation on IndyCar TV contract and charter system. The guys kind of let me down with their thermal reactions.
We knew we would let him down.
But found their way back into my good graces.
All right.
Well, you know. Can't win them all.
You can't.
Yeah, that's from Xander underscore Ridge on Twitter. Hey, guys. Awesome episode. You're my favorite IndyCar podcast. And he mentions another one we're not going to name because we're nice. He said, glad you guys don't defend Grosjean every chance you get. No reason to do that. He says, I think Prima joining the grid would be a good thing. They're very good. Think would bring some fresh air. And maybe that's another aspect. It's a different kind of team.
That's right? What I'm saying. That's why I think it'd be great for them to be able to get into the series in a position in which they could potentially be a charter team. They can compete for the leader circle. Maybe they will be able to based on what IndyCar announces. I look at this and we talk so much about IndyCar and fresh new ideas and trying new things. That goes for teams too. Here's a team that wants to come in right away, hit the ground running with two full-time cars. Okay, they're going to invest in the series. They have proven success elsewhere in terms of racing, and people are holding on to old teams that haven't done anything in forever and saying, oh my gosh, you know, we got to make sure we protect those teams. I was like, why? Got to look forward. What takes this series into the next 10 or 15 years? It's going to be teams like Prima getting in and having success. Maybe Pratt Miller getting in and having some success as well. It's not going to be the same teams that are bottom feeders year after year after year that all they do is add cars to the grid. Let's add some cars to the grid that are actually going to be competitive.
Meanwhile, thoughts on Fox. This from Box This Lap 2X. Not a lot of casual tune-in on FS2 as the 138th most watched network last year with an average of 20,000 viewers.
Hey, it's in the top 140.
Here's my thing, though. If we're talking practice and qualifying on FS2 and this hypothetical, you know, Fox TV deal, average of 20,000 viewers, is that compared to Peacock?
Yeah, right?
Like, honestly, I don't know because we're never going to get the Peacock numbers.
And there's a reason why.
It is, you know, say IndyCar gets 10,000 for a practice session or 20,000 for qualifying, you can get a bigger audience. Like, the fact that you're at least on cable, and I get people are going away from cable, but still, it's a more known platform.
Well, and who's to
I don't think it's the worst thing.
And who's to say in three or four years, FS2 isn't a more watched network? If
with the new Big Ten TV deal, right, and games, you know, we know how football and basketball work. Games, you know, don't start or end on time, and so a game gets pushed to FS2, right? Is that the worst thing?
I mean, 3-4 years ago, people said you were going to have your majority of your races or games or whatever on FS1, people were like, ooh, now that's not the reaction.
No. 500 Indy 1911 says, Fox is not an upgrade from NBC for IndyCar. He has a chart kind of detailing point values. Look, everyone has their opinion. That's totally fine. I think a lot of people are hit or miss on this, and if this is a good deal. Someone else, Aaron Bear 317, saying, does Fox put Indy Next on TV? They actually promote it. I can't remember the last time I saw an ad for Indy Next streaming on Peacock, if ever. I've never seen an ad.
That is a very good point.
So if Lights, as we still call it, is on FS2,
I think that's
a huge win.
Even if it's 10,000 people tune in, it's more people that are watching Indy Next races on Peacock, at least in terms of casual fans. That's for sure. I mean, Yeah, it's a great point. It's a greater conversation. Like Indie Next is has zero marketing whatsoever. None.
But apparently, Beans B Card blog letting us know a commercial for Long Beach on WWE Raw. So that's good.
Hey, that's cool. I also
told that's going to be a USA race.
Yes, that's right. And I also told you I was driving home from Pensacola from spring break and let me think, Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a billboard
for Barber.
That was cool. It said, and I told you kiddingly, it had a big headline saying, come out and see the stars of NASCAR. But that wasn't right. I was lying.
Thankfully not.
You know, anytime I can try to give Caleb a heart attack, I take advantage. That one didn't work.
No, it did not. You tried. It was a good effort.
It was a good effort.
Several replies on, you posted this poll. This is funny. Rate the Eclipse based on IndyCar teams. Ganassi Penske, nearly 58% of you. Andretti McLaren, about 19%. Ray Hall Meyer Shank, about 9.5%. Carpenter Juncos, 14%. I would say, because I would say Andretti McLaren, it was cool, but we were not in totality. We're at like 99.782% or something like that. And then when I saw pictures of people in the actual totality, it was incredible how different it was.
Especially at
even
the
though
speedway.
I literally could have just drove to here, the work building from my house, which is not even a 10-minute drive.
Yes.
And had a better experience.
But that's how much we valued the Eclipse experience, because I could have driven same from my house 10 minutes maybe and seen totality. But the pictures from the speedway, in which they estimated
incredible.
What 50,000 people.
Yeah. And Ed Carpenter did a demo run on
he
track.
Did.
I mean, that,
which
that's
I think it was whoever had
marketing.
That idea was a great idea for sure. So yeah, it was,
and national media coverage. I think CBS, NBC were all there. So
well,
I mean, they
and,
got a ton of exposure.
Who's the guy from Jim Cantore?
Yeah. Weather
did
Channel.
Did a milk bath. He poured milk all over himself like he was celebrating.
Doug Bowles climbed a fence.
Did he?
I don't know if you saw the picture he posted.
I didn't
see
that part.
He had to sprint to get to where his family was, like in time for totality. He had to climb a fence out of like gasoline alley, and someone took a photo. It's pretty funny.
Who's that guy in a blue suit?
Yeah,
climbing over the fence.
Some replies on that. Poet Shevchenko said, since I was outside a total eclipse area, I rated Alonzo McLaren Carlin. Oof. Jeremy from HBG, pretty cool with the welder's mask. Yeah, we had our special glasses
we
at
did.
Home. Jeff Cerneski said, Ray Hall Meyer Shank, I live in Georgia. I was in the race, had some results, but not victory lane. I did have two Hondas in the driveway, though. Devious BSTD said, I'd say Andretti McLaren because in my area, we only got 91% totality. Very good, not Ganassi Penske level good, LOL. But it was fun. It was a fun event. As much as we blasted it, We had a good time with it.
It was cool to see what I drive a ton of miles. I mean, we couldn't even drive 10 miles to see so totality. So to each his own, it was cool. But it was a really exciting event down at the Speedway in totality.
And then we have this email from Ron. Hey, fellas, I'm a terrible person to judge Fox's NASCAR coverage because I don't watch garbage series like NASCAR or F1. You say on previous episodes that you think Fox might be a better media partner. The attached article is a very different take. I can say that their opinion of these stupid cartoon pictures of players on their football coverage is just awful. I'd hate to see that for IndyCar. That article from Front Stretch talking about Fox. Look, everyone has their own opinion on all of this. And in the premise of this article, it says inside IndyCar, a fox in the hen house obviously is, you know, where this would go. But again, here's my thing. FS2, better than Peacock. Assuming that the Spulu bundle, which is, you know, Fox,
supposedly coming,
Warner Brothers Discovery, which includes like TNT, TBS for sports, and then obviously all the ESPN properties. If that gets launched this fall, that makes it work. And say that the cost for that, even if it's $50 a month, that basically all but eliminates the need for even a YouTube TV or anything. Like, all I would need would be Peacock, and that's just for watching Big Ten sports.
And that's $5 a month.
Yeah.
Unless you get a deal.
Like, I wouldn't need, I guess you need Amazon Prime for Thursday Night Football.
But you don't have streaming stuff. You could get rid of your over-the-air.
You could get rid of, yeah, exactly. But like, you keep your, you know, buy an antenna for over-the-air, and then you don't need cable or a streaming or satellite, whatever, as long as you have good enough internet, and this is your option.
I think there's varying degrees of opinions, and not saying any of them are right or wrong. We feel that Fox is a bit greater opportunity because of the money involved. And when you look at the over-the-air options. FS2 is better than Peacock. FS1 is better than USA. And then you can look at Fox and NBC and kind of go back and forth. The cartoon graphics aren't my favorite. I guess I don't really let it bother me. If maybe there's a segment of younger fans that like it, I don't know. But I also just, different isn't always good, but I think different is refreshing. I just don't feel like NBC is anytime soon investing in some new ideas for IndyCar. Well, it's just kind of there.
And then the news came down the other day. So we record Friday morning. This was what, yesterday? Yesterday morning or early afternoon, that CW is going to begin its broadcast of NASCAR Xfinity races a year earlier. They'll do the final 8 races of 2024, taking them over from NBC and USA Network. Now, that will help CW because you'll have a lot of college football lead-in or post, right, in terms of viewers.
Uh-huh.
But that's a pretty big deal.
And is that another indication of
that NBC's dropping motorsports?
Yeah, they're dropping motorsports.
Exactly. I think that's as good of a sign, if any. That's what's happening here. One other note to get to on the mailbag. Someone asking about Laguna Seca. This from Lynn_IndyCar. How long do you think Laguna Seca will stay on the schedule? First race was Sonoma in 2008, the merger year till the final one. Went to Laguna Seca in 2019. And the crowd was half the size of Sonoma and the racing was horrible. Look, it'll be on the schedule as long as Laguna Seca and the powers that be want to pay the sanctioning fee. Plain and simple.
Yeah, and I think you look at Laguna Seca and the change in ownership and all that stuff. And
they just repaved the track, too.
Repaved it, so they want to see how it races and all that stuff. I don't think that area of the country is ever going to be a bastion on the schedule for IndyCar, whether it's Sonoma or Laguna Seca. I think there's value at Laguna Seca, but if Laguna Seca went away and IndyCar replaced it with an event, I wouldn't miss it whatsoever.
It's a cool setting. The racing, cool to be setting. Fair, the racing was chaotic.
Yes, it was last very season. Good last year. But, you know, we got to get rid of chaotic races because Nashville street course is gone. That was chaotic, but, you know, that had to go away. But in all seriousness, I've never felt like Sonoma and Laguna Seca were that secure on the schedule ever. I still feel that way with Laguna Seca. If more people would go, it would probably help. But is the worst thing for Laguna Seca and Sonoma the fact that Long Beach is such a huge event? I know it's not close, but it's a couple hours. Not that far.
They're far enough apart, you know, on the schedule and in terms of mileage. I don't know. I like that they have two races in California. It makes sense.
I agree. I don't want
cool
it to go
if
anywhere.
Long Beach was the finale.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of buzz, but why would they do that? That would ruin the event.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't know if IndyCar goes forward and just every year they have either Sonoma or Laguna Seca, I think that's fine. But I don't have any particular attachment to either race or either racetrack.
Time for news and notes and just a few things to get to before we wrap it up. McLaren just announced minutes ago. They'll have the M16 driven by Tony Kanaan at the Grand Prix of Long Beach. That was the car celebrating the 50th anniversary of their first Indy 500 victory. That would have been Johnny Rutherford in 73? Is that right? I guess it would be 74. We're talking 50 years.
Yeah, I can't remember which year. But yeah, oh yeah.
So that's cool. Also, speaking of Aaron McLaren, Gavin Ward has been named to the IBJ 40 under 40 list. That's the Indianapolis Business Journal. So congrats to him. And there was a story on this a few months ago. The team principal since October 2023 of him pushing for IndyCar to have sort of a summer break built in, you know, just to mental health and
protected.
No one latched on to, which is unfortunate because I think it's an excellent idea. You look at what these crews do throughout the entire month of May. Then you still have to go to Detroit the week after. You have Road America even after that this year. I mean, it's a grind. And if you just had like a 2-week period where everyone just chills, like in Europe, they call it holiday, right? And it's usually in August. it would be nice. And I think he's trying to kind of change the culture of IndyCar. And look, it's a process, but I think he's on the way to a really good idea there.
Hopefully it gains some further momentum in the coming years.
Meanwhile, Michael Andretti and Andretti Global have officially opened their F1 facility at Silverstone as they continue at pace, as Michael called it. 48,000 square foot facility, Silverstone Park, obviously the home of the British Grand Prix. Workforce currently of about 80 people designing and developing a car that could race in 2026, even though they've already been denied. But here's the thing. Even though they were denied, the fact that they continue to move forward with this stuff, I actually give them credit, because it won't shock me if either someone drops out or F1's looking at the nonsense that's happening with Williams this year and kind of puts them on notice.
It does. And it sounds like, and I don't know if we knew this before, but maybe it was, I guess, maybe an afterthought and I just didn't think about it. They're going to start F3, F2 teams.
Yeah, I did not know that before.
Yeah, I just maybe thought it was, I missed it or what, but I think that's a big thing. And I think it'll further show when there's an opportunity to get into Formula One that Andretti Global is serious about it.
Now, and speaking of Prima, they're not running a lights team. We didn't touch on that previously, but again, that's totally fine. Former IndyCar driver Robert Wickens involved in a scary crash at the Nürburgring in Germany last weekend. And taken to the hospital, it's just for precautionary observation reasons, stayed overnight. But he's getting ready for his next event in IMSA at Laguna Seca in early May. So he said, look forward to returning to Germany, taking another shot at the ring in the future. But glad that everything is okay there.
I never did see a video, but it was like he flipped over between the padding and the wall or something
like that. Something like that, yeah. Congrats to Mark Janes, the voice of the Indy 500. He was inducted to the Indiana Sports Writers and Sportscasters Association Hall of Fame just over a week ago. One of the voices of the 500, obviously Sid Collins, Paul Page, and Bob Jenkins. So Mike King, the other one. So but big honor, well-deserved, for Mark Janes.
Definitely.
The other notes, so the Eclipse, right? IMS doing a big event there and some data coming in on that. Over 50,000 fans, all 50 states, 33 countries, more than 80% of them first-time IMS visitors.
Wow.
You had NBC with the Today Show and NBC Nightly News, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, News Nation, obviously Jim Cantore, the Weather Channel there as well. And the countries represent, it's a long list. Nathan Brown went over this, but I mean, this is great stuff for the sport.
And good to see people, 80% of people the first time they had been to the Speedway, whether they become fans or not, the fact that they were able to experience that is really cool.
Work continuing at the Milwaukee Mile. They're doing repair and improvement projects right now. They've poured new concrete walls, new stretches of safer barrier, reinforced catch fencings, rehabilitating sections of the asphalt surface as well. So getting ready for IndyCar coming up later on this summer.
Let's go.
Excited for that to be back on the schedule. And Scott McLaughlin, he was at the Masters earlier this week. He's a big golf guy, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, was he?
And coming up this Sunday, so that's what, April 14th, the Indy Kart Exchange is hosting a free event, 3 to 5 p.m. Indy Kart Exchange is off 96th Street in Indianapolis. There will be a driver autograph session from 3 to 4 p.m. That's free. Parkside cards will be providing specially made cards for drivers to sign. Limit one autograph per person per driver. Connor Daly, Marcus Ericsson, Jack Harvey, Christian Lundgaard, Felix Rosenquist, all set to participate in that event. That's coming up soon. Coming up in due time in May, the Indy Memorabilia Show. It's back May 23rd through 25th, Embassy Suites Event Center in Plainfield. So save the date there. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Leading up to the that event, 170 plus vendor tables, driver autograph sessions, giveaways, silent auction, and more. RacingMemorabiliaShow.com is where you get all the info for that.
Cool.
And I think we had one other thing I wanted to get to. Let me see. That is actually it. All right. Anything that we missed?
I don't believe so.
So with that, time for our random split error driver of the week.
All right, we're going to IndyCar and going to the late mid-90s and the early 2000s. We're going with Mr. Stan Waddles.
Yes, definitely heard of Stan Waddles.
Stan Waddles raced in portions of several seasons in the Indy Racing League, 1996 to 2001, 19 career starts. He started three Indianapolis 500s, 98, 99, and 2000, actually qualified eighth in the 2000 Indianapolis 500, finished 23rd. His high finish in Indianapolis was 17th in 1999. Overall, he raced with several different teams. His top finish of eighth at the second Texas race in 1998 with the Metro Racing Systems team. Do you remember
that
idea. At all?
He was also eighth at Las Vegas, too, in the 96-97 season.
That's right. Also with Metro Racing Systems. Now, when you click on Metro Racings, it's like a French like racing club. And there's pictures of them playing rugby. It's like I have no idea what Metro Racing Systems was. But raced portions of 3 years for that was with Hemelgarn in 2000 and 2001. His final race as a IRL driver was the 2001 Indianapolis 500, where he failed to qualify, crashed in qualifying. He had raced to a 12th place finish at Atlanta the previous race. And that was it. And maybe if, people remember him the most with in 1999 as part of that crash at Charlotte that killed three spectators when debris from his car cleared the fence and went into the stands. So that was the most unfortunate for his career and for the situation, maybe his most well-known aspect of racing in the IRL. But overall, again, as we said, 19 races, high finish of eighth at a pair of different races, raced for Metro Racing Systems, in which anybody who has information on that team needs to contact us.
Yeah, no clue on that one.
But yes, Stan Waddles, this week's random split error driver of the week. Did we have any tweets of the week?
No
tweets. So we're gonna wrap the show with Waddles.
That's right, and we'll be back next week talking Long Beach
race week.
Finally, it hasn't been as bad though.
No,
it
really
I think
has.
This is the week where it really sets in.
I think it's different when you have a long break when there's literally nothing else going on, like the dog days of summer. Like we'll have the Olympics, unless you're into the Olympics. We had the NCAA tournament to keep us entertained during this break early in the season.
And now we do not.
No. Now we're back next week.
All right. That does it for us. For Justin Kinney, I'm Caleb Hatch. Thanks for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.